We're talking basketball here on the Hoopball Sacramento Kings podcast. I am Sam Comenti alongside the incomparable and all-knowing Jill Adge. And joining us today, our first guest in this Jill and Sam format of the Hoopball podcast, we have Kings Herald own Tony Zipteris joining us from not Boston, but we're going to say Boston for the sake of it, joining us from a different time zone. Tony, how's it going, man?
Sam, it's going great. Thanks for having me on. And it's always a pleasure to get back on the podcast with Jill, my old podcasting buddy. So excited to talk Kings today with you guys.
Awesome. We're happy to have you. And Jill, how are you? Sorry, I just totally blew over you there.
No, I'm good.
Co-host, and I didn't even say hi to you. Hi, Jill.
We're all about the guests today. We're good.
Yeah, we want to spoil our guests, right? It's like anytime someone comes by your house, you want to just make sure they have everything they need. Tony, you want a water or anything? A beer?
I was going to say, I'm a little cold. Can I take my shoes off? I don't know what the policy is.
Yeah, shoes off, man. Go ahead. Get comfortable. Couple things we want to get to right away. We've, of course, had some Kings basketball this week. That's what me and Jill have been talking about mostly, Tony. Number one on my list, though, I have to say this to you, man. This is my first time actually seeing you and what you look like. Because you and a lot, it seems like a theme amongst the Kings Herald crew and a lot of Kings media, like Tim Maxwell, Sacktown Baby Draft. I don't know what you guys look like. You don't ever show your faces. So I've known you when Jill said Tony's going to join us. I was like, Tony, like the guy who's got Bill Walton in sunglasses and a hippie shirt on his Twitter as his bio. She was like, yeah, exactly. That guy. Awesome Twitter bio profile pic. I laugh every time I see it. It causes me to like all your tweets.
Yeah, it's funny. I get messages once in a while because I do post pictures. Like, I think random story, but Adrian Wojnarowski was in Boston pre-pandemic. He was doing a live podcast with Sam Presti, which was random. I guess Sam Presti might have went to Emerson, which is a college in Boston where they held the podcast in. And we, me and a friend went in because we're crazy. I mean, you got to be a crazy basketball person to buy a ticket for a live podcast. But it was Woj at Emerson College, which is kind of not too far away. That'll be a fun little thing to go do. So we went there. It was a packed house. Like I said, Sam Presti was there. Troy Reaver was there. So it was a fun little collection of basketball Twitter people. You could tell other people there from basketball Twitter because we were talking to people in front of us in the seats and they were all like on Twitter tweeting pictures or whatever. After the show, they did a like a meet and greet. So knowing this is going to happen, I printed out the Adrian Wojnarowski, like the sale of Seattle is first and one on the goal line, the like kind of death knell tweet for all the Sacramento people saying that the Kings were leaving. And I printed that out to bring to him to take a picture with, because that'll be funny, to have Woj, me and Woj, the picture of him in this tweet that he was clearly wrong about. So I got, it was my turn in line. Me and Woj and Sam Presti had a fun time. It was funny that Sam Presti is also in that picture because he had nothing to do with it.
Where did I find this photo?
Oh, it's on Twitter. That's what I'm saying. Reason I started the story is I posted that picture up. Was me and Woj. And I think it was one version with Woj, another with Sam Presti. I might not have posted the Presti one. But people found out what I looked like. And I got a lot of messages that were like, oh, so you're not this old guy. Because if you don't click on the Twitter profile, it doesn't say it's Bill Walton. So if you just look at, you think I'm like some...
Or a quick scroll through.
Right. Yeah. You think I'm some crazy, like hippie old guy, which I think is really funny that people might think that's what I look like or that I'm that old. So yeah, I get that. I've gotten that a few times when I do post the odd picture that is really me. Like, oh, so you're not actually that old guy? And I'm like, no. And if you don't know, that's Bill Walton. That's on you. Right. That's not on me.
Yeah. So they're like, you're not actually Bill Walton? I thought that's what you were. Come on. That is, those are people that obviously don't follow basketball very well. I'm going to... Might get sidetracked now because I'm currently on your Twitter page. Clicked over to media so I can get just the photos.
Oh, it's going to be a while. It's a couple years ago.
Okay, well, I'll get back to you on this one. I'll casually go through this as we go through the show. But since we were last on the podcast, the Kings wanted to get another game. They're undefeated. I just like to say that for as long as I can. I don't care that it's preseason. I don't care if they just win the first game of the regular season, then lose 10 straight. I will definitely say they're undefeated after they win that first game if they're 1-0. So handled the Clippers, and I say handled because they really took it and ran away with it in the third quarter, second half. Held their opponent under 100, and I just say it like that because that's not a sentence I say ever. They held their opponent under 100 points. They did. Round of applause. That's an incredible feat for the Sacramento Kings. I don't care that it's preseason. Yeah, 110-98, I believe, was the final. Tony, what were your takeaways from that last preseason game in Los Angeles? Did you have anything that stuck out to you about the way the Kings played?
I mean, the only thing is, obviously the 7-0 streak dating back to summer league and now preseason. Nothing in particular stuck out to me. I guess maybe like De'Aaron Fox scored so effortlessly, and he looks so big now. You see people, you know, tweet all the time about how they've added 15 pounds of muscle or reports about this and that. Fox is a guy, and I haven't tweeted this out yet, but I went back and looked at some footage of him from rookie year. And if you see him now and actually, like, you think he gained weight, and he did, but if you go watch the highlights from his rookie season, he was tiny. It's crazy. It looks like a totally different person. We're only, what, 4 years in? That's not necessarily a takeaway from that Clippers game, but just seeing how well he played after not playing so great in the Phoenix game. And then the Kings keep playing well. And this has been my take on sort of Kings fandom forever. We're allowed to celebrate whatever we want to celebrate. We have so little to celebrate that we can ironically cheer for a 7-0 winning streak. We can get excited about preseason games. I agree. Like the Lakers fans, they should not get excited about preseason games, right? But we are allowed to do that. We get nothing. If this is the best the Kings are going to play all year, I'm not going to dwell on the negative. I'm just going to have a good time watching them play good basketball.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. Right. And then you have to start somewhere, right? Like, I don't care if it's summer league, preseason, whatever, like, build your blocks. You got to start somewhere, regardless if it's not game one yet. We're playing our main guys, right, until the very end of the fourth quarter, like normal. I could care less if other teams aren't playing their guys. The point is the Kings are doing what they are supposed to be doing. And since that is usually rarely the case, as small as a thing as it is, you still have to point it out and say, good job for doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, it's the little things, and we've touched on that quite a bit in these past couple podcasts. Be optimistic and enjoy it while you can. Why not? You know, it's been so long that we've been mistreated as Kings fans that, yeah, I get excited watching highlights of Davion, 13 rebounds, 3 assists, playing tough defense on Paul George. I enjoy watching that video of Paul George dabbing him up after a great defensive stand. These things that in the long run we'll forget about and mean nothing are things that we can sit on and enjoy for now. And especially because we don't have another game till Monday. The schedule kind of, I feel like, got us real excited. You had Monday, then Wednesday, and then just pretty much almost a week off until they play again against the Blazers on Monday. But Tony, do you, me and Jill have talked about this. Are you believing some of the hype around the Kings in this revamped defensive scheme with Doug Christie on board and our man, Coach Mike, Captain Defense? We try to avoid saying his last name because it also throws us off. But are you believing, are you falling for like these old school, it's been like 2 years, these scores vibes that me and Jill are getting from this year's Kings squad? Are you feeling it?
I can't say, I'm not going to go there because. Okay.
That was special.
I was actually blown away. So I've kind of made fun of the Iman Shumpert narrative for years now. I just think it's like a silly thing. Like the way that we romanticize the 4 months of Iman Shumpert in Sacramento is so funny to me.
Make a statue already.
Right. I've always thought that. I've always felt that. So watching the Clippers game, I don't know if you guys picked up on this, but it was the Clippers feed. There was no local feed. And my brain almost exploded on the Clippers feed. They mentioned the Iman Shumpert era. Never has a middling NBA player meant so much to the narrative of a franchise than Iman Shumpert in Sacramento. That blew me away that even the Clippers local team is mentioning a role player that was on the Kings like 2 years ago. That blew me away. So I'm not buying into that part of it because I don't know. I don't want to give any more power to the Iman Shumpert narrative. The vibes are good. I'll leave it at that. But I'm not going to equate anything to the ridiculousness, in my opinion, of the Iman Shumpert impact. That's just my feelings on it.
Totally understandable.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that got me the most about the whole Shumpert thing when it happened was after the trade happened and then they gave the interviews right from the locker room and like the day before interviews or prior to it happening, and then all of a sudden that it was like that, you know, that game someone does with their hands where it's like they're smiling and then they're mad like in the matter of a second. It just changes. And they were verbally saying yeah, we just don't know, like, if we can do it without him and without that. And to me, it says a lot about Shumpert, but it also says a lot about those guys and those young guys that are still on the team that were part of that, that you're getting these contracts and you're making these you're making the money. At some point, you got to figure it out whether there's that kind of vibe person or not, right? Like, at some point, these guys do have to figure it out. You can't have necessarily just a Tristan Thompson, a Shumpert, because who knows if Tristan's even going to be on, you know, the roster the whole year. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. And let's say he is traded. Are they going to do the same kind of thing in the locker room? Yeah, I just don't know if the vibe's, you know, going to be the same or not. If you're that serious about making these leaps, they all have to kind of become those guys and take that responsibility of keeping that vibe, keeping that flow, keeping that going. And, you know, maybe Mitchell can help with that. Just in the fact that on the court, if you're out there with them and you're not giving that effort, it's glaring. Like, you have to show up playing with him. And so one thing I did like about, I know that everyone wants to talk about Buddy and how many threes he shot and all this stuff. Is it coming off the bench with Mitchell, his assists are up, his rebounds are up. And last year, I will just say, preseason, his defensive rating was 110. In the season, it was 116. With Mitchell through these two games, it's 80. Like, I don't think Buddy Hield has ever had a defensive rating of 80, like, in a two game span, probably ever. I understand it's preseason, it's early, but to me, you're showing, hey, I can do it. Like, I don't want to hear the excuses of you're still playing against NBA talent, right? Like, you're showing yourself that you can actually go in there and do it. And so, I think as between the two games, their defensive rating is like 98 or something like that. It's under 100, crazy. Which it was over 100 last preseason. So again, like, baby steps, progress, you know, whether the stats end up meaning anything or not, I'm going to point them out and people can take them how they will.
Good job, Jill. You got to keep us.
But,
up to,
you know, I appreciate, you know what I mean? Like, you know, for one of the, I mean, Buddy's actually showing other parts of his game, even if things are frustrating. And, you know, I'll always point that out when that's happening. So
good teams have glue guys, not just one though, multiple. And the problem with that 2018 Kings team was that Iman seemed to be, as you guys were just touching on, he was the only glue guy, I guess. Cause yeah, you trade him and it shouldn't have been that big a deal, cause he really wasn't someone that was impacting the game on the court necessarily with his play, but it did. It threw off the whole rhythm of this team and they fell apart at the end and they blew like a 30-point lead in that last game that really cemented Jaeger's.
You had Alec Burke, who was like not scoring, used. I mean, 15 off the bench for Cleveland at the time, and all of a sudden couldn't make a basket here and is now back in New York, you know, making every basket. So again, it's more than just Shumpert leaving. Like, we lost a whole part of a bench, you know, scoring, you know, like more pieces to that puzzle that were supposed to happen,
right,
that didn't happen.
Jaeger didn't,
and you know, and maybe had he had his average, wouldn't have made a difference. Maybe that would have made all the difference for the Kings and, you know, getting a couple more wins and coming out with that. So, there were a little bit more pieces, you could say, than I guess just Shumpert as well.
Yeah. And they had like there was the Brandon Williams and Dave Jaeger drama. There was behind the scenes stuff. There was the Vlade, there was the power struggle. So I'm not,
Jaeger knew he was getting canned, even though it wasn't public, right? Exactly. Players were already trying to get him canned. Like,
right.
Yeah. So there were a lot of things behind the scenes. Yeah.
Shumpert didn't do nothing, but I just think the way that we talk about it now, it's as if they did not trade Iman Shumpert, things would be perfect right now. And there was just so many other things going on that the weight that we give it is the only thing that drives me crazy. But you do need those guys. And Tristan Thompson is one of those guys. My only point really was, like, at some point, the young players need to be the ones that make this really happen. Because you can, guys. Right, you can cycle in and out the role players.
Sure.
You could have traded Shumpert and got another, you know, quote unquote Shumpert. And maybe they did that with Thompson. That's great. But the ceiling of this team is on the young players. It's not on what 100%. Vibes Shumpert can bring, you know?
On a quick aside, by the way, did you guys choreograph wearing very similar throwback Kings shirts? And I'm wearing just a plain
Jill's got a better shirt than me.
I like both your shirts, but I feel like an idiot right now. I didn't, no one gave me this memo.
No,
I'm dressed super.
Yeah, casual. No, I have the King's Herald Kings.
Yes.
Going
very,
on.
Very much fitting.
That's very fitting. Tony, me and Jill have covered our expectations roughly. I mean, we have more we want to get to, especially as preseason rounds out, but we did in one of our last podcasts, kind of an over under of how many wins we felt the Kings could get this year. Jill set it at 41. So, you know, above 40.
I'm going playoffs. Come on.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Play in. And then I did 45. I said, why not? You know, why not us just send it? Someone needs to, you know, really push in all these good vibes.
Yep.
Me and Jill being those people, it seems. So what do you think the expectation could be for Sacramento? It is for Sacramento this year, in your opinion, and throw out a win-loss record, if you wouldn't mind.
I think this is, and I don't know if I've said that. Well, even I'll just come out and say it. I think that this team is a, if they don't make the play-in, it will be a disappointing season. So I don't know how many wins that's going to take in the West, sure. But I do think, and I guess the grounds or the goal I'm setting here is what result would make the end of this season not be, or the offseason be a time of like massive sweeping change. And I think if you don't make the play-in, then Walton's out. I don't know what the future for McNair is, and you're making massive changes. So I think the expectation, I think internally, and I think because it's the internal expectation, it reflects back on the fan base. We've been led to believe that anything other than a play-in would be a pretty big disappointment, a failure, yeah. Right? So that's my expectation. Now, the other part of this is that I'm a little bit disappointed that I'm only expecting a 10 seed, because coming into the offseason, we heard about how aggressive the Kings were going to be. We heard about trades they were trying to make. You know, we know Monty McNair was active. He almost traded Buddy Hield. So my expectations are the play-in. And oddly enough, I'm sort of disappointed that my expectations aren't higher, because I kind of thought they would do a little bit more to make me feel like that was a given instead of what we're hoping the result would be.
Wow. That's actually, just interesting the way you said it, that you're disappointed that your expectations are so low. It's like, dude, you're a Kings fan. Your expectations are always right here. I mean, no one can see me, but right here on the floor. I mean, that's where most expectations are. So I think it's actually great that you have this set expectation that they should be a play-in team, because they should be. Yeah. They absolutely should be.
Well, and it came from Monty's mouth, right? Like if he flat out said, if we're not doing that, then I'm failing. Like as simple as that is, that's why I was brought in here. Right. And half the league makes it every year. We continue to say it. I know we're in the West and I know it's brutal, but half the league makes the playoffs every season.
I think the big difference is they're trying to win. So when you talk about being a Kings fan, having low expectations,
most
of that was seasons where we knew they weren't trying to win.
But they would say it, right?
Right. Yeah. But even then, I remember last season.
You knew there was an underlining.
Yeah. Like Monty was afraid to say the playoffs word. He would not say it. I made a mental note of that. All last year, he would not say playoffs. And they grilled him about it. He would not relent on that. He would not just say the word playoffs. He would just say, we're going to try and win games, whatever. Now they're saying the word. And so that's the reason why I think even as a Kings fan, you can be disappointed that the expectations are low, even if that's play-in, because we haven't been led to believe they were even trying to win for at least a couple of years, or we knew that they had no shot. I would say this team, they're saying they want to win, and objectively, they do have a shot to win.
Right.
Win meaning a 10 seed. So I do think those both aligning hasn't really happened in a really long time, where they're saying they want to win, they're trying to win. And even as an outsider, you see the roster and say, all right, this roster is good enough for a 10 seed.
I mean, Monty McNair is out here tweeting like someone that seems pretty confident right, with this team. Am I right?
He's putting himself out there now. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's just so incredible to me to look at the difference between Monty and how he operates as a general manager, how well-spoken he is. He's a Princeton grad. He's obviously very smart. And you compare that to Vlade, who's just like that old school basketball guy. I was a center. I played overseas. Obviously, because he's from overseas, from Serbia, Hall of Famer. I mean, just like polar opposites in terms of who they are as people. And I don't know how you feel about this, Tony. I also find it reassuring. You're talking about how Monty's tiptoeing, or at least he was last year, around what he's saying, trying not to set off false expectations or hopes or say the word playoffs. Isn't that nice to have a GM that's not going to give in to the press's pressure when they, you know, these almost like trick questions that fooled someone like Vlade, which in Vlade's defense, English is not his first language. So kind of picking on him, honestly, when they would do stuff like that to him. But McNair, way too savvy to fall into that trap. And I just enjoy it because there's no headline stupid quotes coming from our general manager now because he's not putting that out there.
Yeah. Well, and granted, Monty had years of being groomed at of how to tiptoe around it, right? Yes. Where Vladdy was coming in as a former player ambassador, like, you know what I mean? Like totally different job descriptions, right? Like
right. It's, polar opposite.
You know, especially if you're asking him to come in and be the people person, right? Like that was always the seller too, that he's the people person and you have, you know, someone else is like scouting, someone else is doing contracts, like that. So like when you threw everything on a newbie, like it, what happened was not a shock to anybody, right? Which is why I think everyone has such high expectations for Monty because, and the rest of this staff, like he pulled guys from Oklahoma City. He pulled guys from Atlanta. He pulled guys from the Sixers. Like you pulled him from Houston. Like you grabbed guys that were successful in rebuilding, you know, franchises for, you know, while they were there 4 years at a time and finding talent. So they can't really use, you know, the excuses anymore of, you know, what we don't have the talent or the people around that should be able to figure it out.
Yeah, I sometimes think back on the Vlade Divac era, and I don't know that we fully appreciate how absolutely ridiculous hiring him to run the organization is. I mean, yeah. I saw Ben Wallace. The Pistons just hired Ben Wallace, and they brought him into their organization. They didn't make him the dude in charge of everything.
Right.
There is a way you can bring back, you know, former legends and groom them into whatever you see their role being. You don't take a guy who's been out of the country. I mean, he wasn't even living here for a while.
Right.
Some Olympic committee in Serbia. You don't take that guy and just say, all right, Vlade, now make all the decisions. That is the craziest thing I've ever heard. We went through a lot, guy. It was a lot. I mean, that was 5 years of just this person who I love to death, my favorite king of all time.
I know.
And honestly, his run hasn't even clouded my perception of him that much because
I'm there with
he didn't
you.
Have been in that position. He just shouldn't have been in it.
Yeah.
And some people will look at that as me like taking the blame off of Vlade, and maybe I am. It's a soft spot for me. I can't help it, but I'm doing that. He should have never been given that amount of responsibility. It's a crazy thing.
Yeah. And the fact that Vlade even had some success during his tenure, to your point, wow. I mean, good for you. It's kind of like, one of us getting, I mean, not because Tony or Vlade obviously has a basketball background, he played, but in terms of management, he had no idea what he was doing. And he wasn't even in the country. He wasn't even focused on what was probably going on with the Kings basketball. So might as well throw me or Tony or Jill or Damian or someone and have them run the team. Cause you're going to probably have the same concept. But like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm just a fan. I'm a basketball
There's a reason
guy.
Why you see a lot of lawyers running these places is because like you need that kind of
analytical
background
guys.
Because, well, and there's so many rules and different things that, like the normal person is never going to pay attention to, right? That there's so much stuff that we still say that we know that we have no idea. The ins and outs of what goes on in a front office and the laws and the rules and the bargaining, you know, agreements, like it's dates and, you know, when things can go and not go. And it's a lot to throw on someone who has no experience. So keep going with McNair. Like it's, again, the expectations are set and set by his own words, whether, you know, from the end of the I think it was like, was it his exit kind of like press conference and then between draft and now, and then every article that's come out from anybody affiliated with it that, you know, he's still looking for that big swing out there, you know. And I'll say this, where you were said that you were, you know, not upset, but kind of disappointed, which I totally understand. But in the same sense, I also like that he's not, like, he's made that his goal, but we haven't seen him force a bad deal to happen yet because he's so focused on getting that. It hasn't, you know, appeared yet that we know of. And so at least he's still leaving himself open, where I thought in years previous, maybe something didn't, you know, show up. And so we kind of threw darts at things and just prayed that they hit, rather than just kind of letting some time go and then see how pieces go. So it'll be interesting to see if him not, I guess, forcing anything and letting it go, if something does materialize and it's like, okay, good job on waiting.
Yeah.
Because like you said, we did see that, you know, the buddy move wouldn't necessarily have been, you know, that large fish that, you know, classified as that. And I thought that showed he kind of was okay to deviate from going that. And okay, I'm getting a possible 3-for-1 here, right? It was like the draft pick, Kuzma and Trez. So we've seen him kind of, you know, keep his options open. But again, it's, you know, depending on how the season starts out, it's things can change pretty quick. As we know around here.
Oh yeah.
So as always, time will tell.
Tony, I got to before we shift, cause I want to cover, ask you a question, Tony, about something you tweeted. We're going to cover it, but this is just a question, trick question or bonus question, whatever you want to call it. Fun fact. What was Peja Stojakovic's job for the Sacramento Kings? Go.
He was the assistant general manager at one time. I think he was also the G League general manager at one point. I think he got a promotion.
Both incorrect. He did pretty much nothing but look incredibly suave on the sideline, drinking always 100% of the time a Starbucks coffee. That was the correct answer. I'm really bummed you missed on that.
Well, I mean, I would hire. I mean, I will definitely look at Peja. That's fine with me. I mean, put him on the screen.
That's what I'm saying, man. Yeah. I felt like he was there for looks. Like, look at, see Peja's over there. Did you see Peja?
He did great. Like, he nailed that. He nailed that job.
No, I figured that was actually his role. I don't know what it means to be the assistant general manager running the G League. I don't believe any of that hocus pocus. Okay. Shifting gears. Tony, you were pointing out very astutely, I should say, and some other Kings people have done this as well. The Kings are on a pretty remarkable winning streak right now in terms of breaking a curse. We want to call it a curse. I'm not quite sure, but according to your calculations, I'm going to point this on you just in case you were wrong, because I don't want to be pinned for it. The Kings are 7-0 since Shaquille O'Neal's ownership stake in the team, that never made any sense to begin with. His ownership stake in the team was taken away, or he removed it. I don't know the exact way to word that. He sold it. Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to make sure I phrase that the correct way. Since Shaq sold his stake in the team that he should have never had, the Kings are 7-0. Tony, is this what we've been waiting for? Shaq to get the hell out, and then now the Kings can be a dynasty? Is that what I'm seeing happening?
I'm definitely happy he's gone. I'll say that. Although this is out of my depth. I do have some very minor concerns about whatever weird institution just purchased like 20% of the Kings. I don't know what any of that shadowy business is. I just assume there's like this Darth Vader type like looming over Vivek now. I have no idea if that's true. I don't
know. Is this the same group that there was at some point over the summer? It was talked about that there was a group that like had purchased multiple stakes in multiple teams. I don't know if this is that same group, and if that's the case, they were just throwing money in, and it's
none of this sounds
like
good.
It's like keeping teams alive.
It is my understanding that you're correct. Yeah, Jill, it's that same group that bought like I don't know, 10% of five different
teams. Possible, like, right?
Me neither. That's why I assume at some point this is gonna come back to bite. I don't know.
I think sorry, go ahead, Tony.
No, I was gonna say on the 7-game win streak, this goes back to my thing where it's like, just let us have a little fun. Like, we know it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And also I think this is just we're giving everyone outside of Sacramento a little taste. And I know I'm not the first person to say this. We've all said this. Don't let the Kings get good, because you're about to get the most obnoxious group of people on the planet. We're on a 7-0 win streak from the summer league and the preseason, and people won't shut up about it. So
I'm talking about it on a podcast. Yeah.
Right. So God forbid they make the playoffs, look out. That's all it is.
I love that, man. That's so fantastic. I want your tweets, all of them. I'm a huge fan. Like, you're one of my, I'm not just saying this because you're on the show. I mean, I have been a fan of the stuff you put out there, but when I saw that, and it was coinciding with several other people too, not to discredit you, but like everyone kind of had a thought, it seemed, at the same time, like, wait a minute, we haven't lost since Shaq got out. And I'm very superstitious. I definitely believe in stuff like that. I think that tied in with, you know, Arco Arena, Sleep Train Arena's demolition. I feel like this is like a perfect storm as we head into the season, where it's like everything is, all the monkeys have been hurled off our backs of the Sacramento Kings franchise. Like, I'm putting that out there into the open, into the world. I think we're clear. We have a
I think all that's left is tearing down Urko, like right, the demolition of that. I think someone said that the last one might be that place, you know, being when it's finally demolished and the hospital being built, that that might like be the last piece.
Yeah. Bright future. Yeah. New beginnings. That's yeah, really I don't what know. We need though.
On one hand, yes, we're riding high, but I mean, this could all collapse in a moment. That's why I'm, but that's why, that's what? Why you and, get and it in when you can.
That's know? Why you hope for the best, expect the worst. Like it's, we're gonna enjoy it while you can, that. Right? Yeah. We're going to enjoy it while we can.
Jill, that should be your Instagram or Twitter bio at the very least, because that's become the catchphrase of this podcast since me and you have been doing it.
Well, the other one I have is, what is it? That build where it's on the building where it says, I know everything happens for a reason, right. But what you're the F? Tweet. Like yeah. It's also everything with the Kings. Like you want to tell me everything happens for a reason. What is the reason?
Yeah. Tell me God. Tony, speaking of pin tweets, I'm just getting off the rails here. Your pin tweet though, also fantastic. I might be in the minority here. I'm actually a huge fan and still am to this day. He's not the best people person. And that doesn't work in today's sports outlook, sports world. You need to be really good communicating with your teammates or your players, however it goes. But I like Dave Yeager. I thought Dave Yeager was the smartest head coach to come through Sacramento since Rick Adelman. And I loved his fire. I love those type of coaches that have like a mean streak or will get in the player's face or will be animated with the refs. I love that. It makes it way more exciting than Luke Walton sitting there very stoic, just thinking about the four concepts that run through his head at all times. In your pin tweet, Tony, is Yeager looking at something that happened with the Kings in like 2018 and being like, what the hell? Is that what he said? We're like, what was that? I don't know if we're allowed to cuss on this. What was that shit? I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
He said that. I don't know what the guidelines are here, but that was so funny.
You're fine. You're fine.
Okay. Whew, thank God. That made me laugh though. Cause it's like, I made me miss Dave Yeager. I'm like, I miss that. You know, I want more Luke Walton punching clipboards and just screaming at nobody. Cause that fires me up, man.
I was a big fan of Dave Yeager. I might put Michael Malone above him if I had to like power rank the coaches post Adelman. But, but yeah, I was a big Dave Yeager fan. Although I mean, it's interesting. Yeager's relationship with the players got him fired.
Right.
And Walton's relationship with the players saved his job.
Saved his job.
So, you know, I think that tells you kind of where the NBA is. And that's, I'm not saying that's even a bad thing. I'm like, for as much as I criticize Luke Walton, then I will say back to the Monty conversation. He hasn't made too many mistakes. I do think retaining Luke Walton and sort of hitching his wagon to Walton and supporting him the way that he did was the one place, in addition to, you know, letting Bogey go, but that was 2 years ago. He just got on the job, whatever. We can talk about that if you want. But the keeping Luke Walton was a big decision that could bite him later on. So I don't think he's had a perfect run, a mistake-free run. I think he has with
sure.
He hasn't made any like personnel mistakes yet that we know of. We don't know what trades didn't happen, et cetera. But of what we do know, I do think retaining Walton in a very important season could be a mistake. And I think, you know, for as optimistic as we are or aren't, I think this fan base would be even more charged in a 7-0 win streak if there was a new coach here that we all had a little bit more faith in, because Luke Walton, to me, outside of being buddy-buddy with the players, hasn't really done a whole lot that gets me excited with his coaching. But I guess we'll see. It's a new staff this year to some degree. Maybe he's learned some things too.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, we saw, and to your point, we saw a lot of coaches right in the offseason, good, successful coaches who were let go because of the relationships they have with the players on their old team. And so that's, you know, whether we agree with the decisions or not, it's pretty common at this point in the NBA, and it being such a players league, as people want to say, right now during this moment. So
yeah, you guys just created a perfect segue. So a round of applause. I really appreciate that. Cause now the next topic we're going to get to is a little roundtable discussion about who we believe the best rookie coach of the seven new coaches in the NBA, who we think will have the most successful first year, and success can be however you define it. But I do want to point out, because I wrote some notes down about the coaches, the league is definitely shifting, as you guys were just touching on, to how teams hire coaches, like what they want in a coach. The brains and the X's and O's guys and the guy that really is good at yelling at people, the Dave Yeagers, that's out of style now. At least it seems to be going that way. Greg Popovich is the last of a dying breed. The average age of these seven new coaches, I had to do math. I can't believe I did this. Thank God for calculators. The average age of these seven coaches is 47 years old. That is including, though, Rick Carlisle, who's 61, taking over again the Indiana Pacers. However, you take that out, obviously, the average age of these guys is like 42. Six of the seven played pro basketball. Jamal Mosley for the Magic played overseas in Australia and Spain. Wes Unseld Jr., a little hint, wink to you, Jill, because I know you're a big fan of his, did not play in the NBA. However, of course,
but has a Hall of Fame dad.
Has a Hall of Fame dad who just
grew up on the court. Regardless, grew up on the court. Yeah.
I just to say this about one Wes Unseld, the late Wes Unseld Sr., Hall of Fame player, MVP in 1969. He was a center in that time in the NBA, and he was 6'7". I just thought that was funny. 6'7" center just shows how far the NBA has gone and how things have changed, because that's Buddy Hield playing center. But yes, the new coaches in the NBA are young former players that aren't, I don't think, considered very wise in terms of X's and O's, maybe Wes Unseld, but not really. That's not what they're known for. They're known as guys that can connect with this age of players because they are in that age group. Jason Kidd for sure. Although he's kind of a polarizing one, but you know, he played not that long ago. So with that said, Tony, go ahead. You can start us out. Who do you think will have the most success in this new era that we're ushering in of NBA head coaches?
I think, and I'm going local here, not just because it's local, but I do think Ime Udoka has a great shot in Boston for a couple of reasons. He's entering a fan base, or I guess an organization, a roster that underperformed last year, in my opinion. So they should have been better this year regardless. Then you bring in a coach who seemingly is doing everything that Brad Stevens did not do, which was connect with the players, build relationships, whatever that entails. But you also have Brad Stevens, X's and O's, still in the organization as a general manager and a lot of his coaching staff. So you know he's going to have some input on how the team plays, even if he's not on the bench every night. So I just think it's a perfect storm there for Udoka to take a roster that underperformed last year and increase their wins and their playoff run by such a wide margin that he gets a lot of credit for their turnaround. Not that he shouldn't, but I do think he's just in a perfect situation where that team was better than they played. They got a little bit better. Their roster, I think they brought it back Al Horford, Josh Richardson they brought in. They got Dennis Schroeder on a tiny contract, who Schroeder might be better than Kemba Walker in 2021 anyways. Ooh. So I think, Kemba, they gave away Kemba. I mean,
well, if he stays healthy, right? Like he's going to be on the court more. That's exactly. And they just came out, Ime just came out and said that yesterday that they're expecting Horford to actually play back-to-backs for the first time this year in the last couple of seasons. So, I mean, that would be huge for them too. Again, if you have someone that can stay healthy and on the court. So,
yeah. And Udoka comes from the Greg Popovich coaching tree. So he also has the X's and O's, just like, that's the guy I would have been thrilled if the Kings hired. So that's another part of my decision. It's a coach that I would have wanted on a team that's much better than the Kings. So I think it's just a perfect recipe for a good first year.
Beautiful. We're going to obviously get mine at the end, but we're thinking the same here, Tony. Jill, I'll know what yours is, but dive in.
Well, no, I was going to actually say, depending on someone's definition of success, like I was going to say, someone who should come in and automatically, based on the talent on the team, it should be Ime, like based on his history and working through the Spurs organization, and then being, I think what, then he went to, was he Philly one year and then the Nets?
Yes.
And then was he Nets last year? So, I mean, he's been under between Pop and
Brett Brown is
was he,
a hated coach, but also a Popovich tree.
And then, I mean, I know Steve Nash was new last year, but the coaching tree that was around Steve Nash last year was top notch. So, I'm excited for Ime to finally get his opportunity, because you guys know I always have my lists of coaches, you know, after every King season, and
Ime
and my other person, Wes Unseld, were at the top. So, you know, at least in the top five. And so my other guy, I would say Wes Unseld, he'll be successful in the wins and losses, but I am excited for that guy to finally get his first opportunity. And I do think you'll see growth, because they do have a mix there now of young and some solid vets. Yeah. I know Beal's kind of going to be your star, but then the rest of it, it's journeyman vets and rookies. Sorry, there's a truck going by. And so, but I mean, he's one guy where he has taken two separate teams and taken them to the top 10 in the league in offense and defense. Not many coaches can say that they can run the X's and O's of offense and defense, right? You're always having your specialists going around, and he's young. He's only 44, but he's been coaching for 15 seasons. Like, that's, you know, he'll be now year 16. So again, he's held almost every position possible. He's coached in the NBA and the WNBA. I mean, the guy's pretty much filled every coaching rank that you can hold leading up to being a head coach. So I'm really excited for him to get his shot. And I do think a sleeper could be Jamal Mosley in Orlando, just because nobody expects anything over there. But that guy's been on three separate teams. He started with George Karl in Denver, then went to Cleveland, and then Dallas, and now Orlando. But each time when he started with those teams, they were in the rebuilding phase, and he stayed there long enough for them to actually rebuild and be successful. So I do think people are sleeping on him, and I hope in that sense Orlando keeps him around, because he's done it with four different organizations. I'd like to see him get that shot to complete it in Orlando as well.
Either of you guys are going to mention that Ime was part of one of the greatest Sacramento Kings teams of all time? Seriously, neither of you? 2009, 2010, Sacramento Kings.
He played in that comeback. He was in that Chicago Bulls comeback.
Thank you, Tony. Yep. I mean, the guy deserves some love for how
I go watch that.
I do think a lot of people locally know that. Yeah,
on the 22 win team that they had that year. Yeah, mine was to finish this one off. I had Ime too, Tony. I'm a huge fan of his. I think he would have been excellent as a Kings head coach. He has the background. He has the former player that he can. You can really connect to those guys and understand them on a more personal level. He's also in the best of these coaches outside of Jason Kidd, which I say that with a sigh because it's Jason Kidd and I don't like him. I think his reputation precedes him as a head coach, but Jason Kidd, of course, has Luka Doncic and Kristaps and an incredibly talented Dallas Mavericks team. He's expected to win. Do I think that's going to blow up? I do. I don't know how that's going to work very well. Truthfully, I do believe Ime will work in Boston. And that team will be very good and be top five in the East, which isn't saying a whole lot. It's the Eastern Conference. And yeah, Jamal Mosley, I also think he deserves a little bit of love. Orlando has some talent on that team. They have no expectations, though. Perfect situation for a well-respected assistant to step into, former assistant, now head coach. And then wrapping a bow on it, Darvin Ham is not a head coach. Absolutely should be a head coach. Darvin Ham, the associate head coach.
Oh, yeah.
For the Milwaukee Bucks under Budenholzer, absolutely deserves to be a head coach, Jill. And I think next year he's a guy that should be at the top of every list for teams looking for head coach. That guy deserves it.
Yeah, I think he was one of the last finalists with Wes, I believe, right?
Yes.
In Washington. But you know what's going to be interesting is last year New Orleans blamed all of their failures on Stan Van Gundy. And now they bring in Willie Green, who players, supposedly love, right? He's a player's coach. And so it'll be interesting to see if what he can get out of the New Orleans team, because again, they have, right, similar to the Kings, they have really high hopes because they want to keep Zion. They want to keep him happy. They have to deal with much more talk than we do. Thank God, nationally. But that's kind of going to be a make or break year with Griffin, I think, too, over there. So yeah, that's talent. another name to keep an eye on to right. See if he's able to rally the troops and with the Pelicans.
He's definitely an outlier because I don't think any of us know enough about him as a coach to really have too much of an opinion because he hasn't been a coach for very long. But he is also in a position where he has a talented roster, but a very evasive general manager. So I don't know if that's a great situation to succeed. I hope he does, because I hope Zion makes the playoffs. He deserves to be at the front of everything happening in today's NBA.
I just hope they don't make the playoffs before we do.
Fair enough. Very true. The Pelicans. What always a hilarious name for a team. Okay, final segment here. We're going to go ahead and share our sleeper teams, kind of going hand in hand with who we think will be the best rookie coach. Why not throw out who we think will be the sleeper team, the best underdog story of 2021. Tony, you're the guest today. Please, tell us, who do you think is going to surprise people this season?
You're going to have to tell me if this counts as a sleeper. It's a sleeper to me in the sense that they weren't in the playoffs last year, but I loved, unless I'm forgetting a move that I didn't love. So I will reserve the right to take this statement back if I go and look up and see a transaction I didn't like. But from my recollection, I loved everything the Chicago Bulls did this summer. They went for it on every level in a way that we thought the Kings were going to go for it. It started last trade deadline with Vucevic. They brought in Lonzo Ball, who I had been begging the Kings to sign for 2 years now, knowing he wanted out of New Orleans. Alex Caruso, a great little piece off the bench. They already have Zach LaVine, who has transcended into a star to a level that I didn't know that he necessarily had in him. They lost Lauri Markkanen, who I do enjoy as a player, but there was some weird chemistry there. They got a much better coaching staff than they had in the, I forget that dude's name. The Jim Boylan era. The Eastern Conference is weaker than the West. So I think there's some more upside, some more ability to shift in higher seeds there. So I think the Bulls are going to be a playoff team. I don't know if that makes them a sleeper. I could even see them making top four if everything breaks right in the East for them. I just really like how they went for it. They were sort of in no man's land. And over the course of 9 months, they were able to turn their roster from something that was very unappealing with chemistry issues and a terrible head coach and one player in Zach LaVine to this roster now that has a lot of talent up and down, and they're going for it. And it made Zach LaVine happy. The fan base is charged. I know I follow a lot of Bulls fans on Twitter. They're all talking about how the Bulls are back, and I kind of buy it. I believe him. So that's my sleeper, Chicago Bulls.
I don't believe that.
I was actually going to say the same thing.
Oh, dang it.
I'm right there with you. I was, now that you said them, the only other team I really enjoyed the moves that they made was the Raptors. They didn't make the playoffs again last year. I don't necessarily, if they're going to do it, they'll probably be towards the bottom unless they surprise some people. But I do like the young youth movement that they have going there and the size. I think their size is going to give a lot of problems to teams. If they can stay healthy, I think they have a good chance of surprising people, just because most teams I don't think are going to be able to match up when they throw out 4-6-8 guys and Fred VanVleet.
Scotty Barnes looks so good already too.
Chicago was the other one, and then I'll say Toronto I think has a good shot just for their defense and size and grit.
Well, they're also very well coached. And the Bulls, Billy Donovan is a phenomenal, very often underrated head coach.
They had their new front office, right? Last year.
Yep.
Greek
guy, Tony?
Karnosovas, I believe. Is that
from Denver? Yeah. And so he learned how to build well there. And he didn't take him long in Chicago to do it.
Both teams have a common theme of being very versatile. As Jill, you just said, Chicago could easily run out of lineup that has Lonzo, Caruso, DeRozan, LaVine, and then Vucevic. There's one big dude in the center for the Raptors. That big guy would be either Siakam, who's not even big, or Ken Birch, who had a really good finish to the year for them last year. So yeah, they're teams that are very modern NBA teams. They're heavy on guards and wing players, and we're going to beat you with the fact that you can't guard all of this. My surprise team, sleeper team, now I feel kind of dumb compared to what you guys said. Again, success is taken in different ways. Just the first team I thought of is the Detroit Pistons. I think they're a sleeper team just because Cade Cunningham is Cade Cunningham. Mm-hmm. I think Kelly Olynyk is wildly overpaid, seemingly everywhere he goes, but a terrific stretch player who's a veteran on a young team that will probably score a lot of buckets. Jeremy Grant was so good last year, and nobody talked about him because he was playing for the Pistons. And Sadiq Bey, Trey Lyles is a rebounding machine who will be a good addition for them off their bench. Josh Jackson, former third overall pick with the Suns. He's looked really good under Dwayne Casey last year and then so far preseason. I don't know. They just got a bunch of young, super talented players that I'm very excited to see play it with no expectations whatsoever. So I do think for that reason, and with a coach who's been there, done that, won a lot of games, they could surprise some people. They definitely can. And again, in the East, you guys both listed Eastern Conference teams. Anything's possible in the East. Yeah. It really is. Any team can pop out of nowhere and win a lot of games because the conference is, for some reason, always so poor. So, yeah, mine's the Detroit Pistons. I also think the Houston Rockets could make some noise in terms of just being a tough team to beat with all the young people they acquired. I know, Tony, you're a big fan of a lot of the prospects that they were able to snag on draft night, if I'm remembering correctly. Were you an Alperin fan?
Oh, yeah. Shengun's my guy, for sure.
Yeah,
Goonies. Sangoonies.
Goon Squad.
Yeah.
And then they have Garuba. They got Garuba too.
On Garuba. They got the best defender, no offense guy, and the best offense, no defense guy in the front court to me. I love that.
Versatility,
Christopher,
man.
From ASU.
Josh Christopher.
They had a good draft.
Yes. So I think there's a lot of good, young, exciting teams this year, and it makes the NBA even more, you know, I'm more anticipation going into this season. So, Tony, you say Bulls. Jill says Bulls / Raptors. I'm throwing stuff at the wall and saying the Pistons. So those are our sleeper teams for 2021. And unless you guys got anything else for today, I'm thinking we want to put a bow around that. I think we've really regurgitated a lot of good basketball stuff on this podcast today.
That felt like a podcast, yeah.
Thank you. You took the words right out.
We said some things.
That felt like a podcast. Hell yes. And so please, guys, go follow us. I say this at the end of every episode. Follow Jill. Follow me. Follow Tony. Tony's going to give you a lot of good insight and a lot of great clips of Tyrese Halliburton. A big Halle guy, aren't you, Tony?
Big Halle.
We all are.
And
we
Tony,
are.
I think most people know where to find your information and your podcast, but if you want to
go ahead
and put it out there,
I meant to say that too. Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, just go find, the King's Herald on Twitter, and then they usually retweet all of our, Kevin does a great job sharing all of our stuff. So you'll see us all over there. So just go follow the King's Herald, support us on Patreon. If you want, patreon.com/King's Herald, that'd be awesome. Excited for another season, covering the Kings independently. It's been an interesting run, having nothing, just kind of being out on our own, but it's been fun. So, join the ride if you'd like to.
Oh yes. Absolutely. You guys write great stuff. He is not Bill Walton. So if you see his page and you're like, who's that? It's not him. But
you may think I'm on edibles though. You may think I am very much Bill Walton if you read my tweets.
So Bill Walton was on edibles when he was in that photo, right? He had to have been. He was high as hell.
Nonstop. He's a Grateful Dead guy. He just follows them around the nation and smokes weed all the time. That's a very known Bill Walton thing.
Protect that man at all costs.
And if you're not already listening to Tony's podcast, go to the King's Herald and listen to the King's Herald Show?
King's Herald Show with Jerry Reynolds.
The legend, Jerry Reynolds, Will, and Tony, and you will not be disappointed.
I have a good story with Jerry Reynolds when I worked for NBC that I'll share next podcast with you, Jill. Just a great man all around, through and through. Just the most genuine human being you will ever meet.
But yeah, we'll save that. We'll say with Jerry, just like there are people that are not as nice as they seem all the time. Jerry is nicer in person than he seems on TV. Just a saint. Just the best. What a treat. Nothing even remotely negative about the experience working with Jerry. It's been fantastic.
Sacramento is truly blessed to have a man like Jerry Reynolds. Thank you guys for listening. I hope everyone has a great weekend. Beat LA, baby.